This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Hello, John.
Hi there, Andrew. How's it going?
Well, news for folks of how it's going. I need some weight lifted off of me regarding editing, so we're cutting the show down to once a month as opposed to twice a month. Or three times sometimes even. It's just going to be once a month, so you're going to get 12 episodes this year. And this is the first one. So, John, thanks for punishing me.
Yeah, I have to get a lick in every now and then. I did have to sit through a house.
No, you didn't have to sit through a house. House 2 is great. Now, there's a lot of movies that we cover, that you cover in particular with me, that are sometimes give or take, all right, pretty good. But there are some that are deliberately meant to make you squirm a little. And I think those are the only ones that you mark down in your little tally, and then you try to get me back. But I'm not doing a tit for tat thing, still.
Oh, I know. Okay. I know, but I sit there and just...
Fine.
You gotta just imagine me just sitting there with evil grin on my face going, muhahaha.
Yeah? So, what is the bane of my existence? No, I mean, sorry. What did we just watch?
We watched Cool World.
Our world. And their world.
Noids do not have sex with doodles.
Are about to collide.
Indulge your best. I'm made of ink, but I'm no dream.
But Ollie said we could watch.
A man is in the bedroom. Come on, make me real.
This is the biggest disaster the cool world has ever seen.
Let me.
Cool World.
I just want to be real.
Rated PG-13.
All right, so... You said I had to find one positive thing to say about this movie.
Yes.
And I'll say it straight off the bat. The soundtrack features a song from Twin Peaks' very own David Bowie.
Take a drink, everybody.
I had to get that in there. That's like the only connection. And it's at the end of the movie. So you have to sit through the entire movie to get to this pretty cool song, which he did, actually. It was like...
It's his first solo song.
In 5 years. Yeah. He had done something with the band.
Yeah, two albums by Tin Machine.
This big hiatus. And then came back with this one song. And this one song is actually pretty good. I actually really like it. It's got a good melody. Well, it's got good production. I like it.
Well, here's the thing that actually kind of sprought on us having to watch this film was I was cruising around at this record store out here in Arizona, and I came across the soundtrack, and you know, just like, oh yeah, that, I remember this existed. And then I'm looking at the track list and going, David Bowie, Ministry, Thompson Twin, The Cult, My Life of the Thrill Kill Cult. I like these bands. Moby, what the heck? This is like before Moby was anyone.
Now, did you just say The Cult or just My Life with a Thrill?
Both. Cult? There's The Cult and good old TKK.
Interesting. Because I only picked out the obnoxious music, which was everything you mentioned, except for The Cult. I don't remember hearing The Cult in
there. Yeah, honestly, in listening to the film, I don't recall where The Cult track falls in.
The Cult is a little metal-y. I know this. They have the kind of squealing, high-pitched vocals that I typically don't like, but living in California for so long as I did, while you were there too, K-Rock used to play The Cult all the time. They used to play at least 3 or 4 of their songs. So I'm familiar with those 3 or 4 songs, and I don't hate them. And they're not exactly metal. They're kind of Sunset Strip and British. So it's weird. And they seem like a hair band, except they don't. Their music sounds better than hair.
They're a hard rock band. You know, they have heavier songs than others, but it's like heavy alternative more so than anything else.
So I'm surprised I didn't pick them out, but whatever. I'm not an aficionado on The Cult.
I think the soundtrack's amazing, actually. Like,
I knew you would.
Yeah, well, that's...
My ears were rolling their eyes as we were watching this movie.
But that's the thing, is like, it's also like that Cult song is not the best Cult song either, but it's still like pretty damn good soundtrack, and I'm just thinking, going, you know what? I kind of want to see this movie again.
So, what was the year that this movie was made?
1992.
1992 was a terrible year for electronic music, for the most part. Yet, you like it.
Well, again, it's early Moby stuff, Future Sound of London. Like I said, Ministry, Future Sound of London, Thrill Kill Cult. I mean,
well, Thrill Kill Cult, it was just their single.
Well, they have 2 songs there. I only picked out the remixed version of Sex on Wheels because that's a fairly prominent track in the scene. The Ministry song I was surprised at on the soundtrack, and then in watching the film going, really? They're only playing the opening little bit, and it's just as we're going to the prison. And I'm like, oh, okay.
I'm gonna ask you. Do you like this movie because it's Vegas-based? You used to live in Vegas, so do you have an affinity towards Vegas, actually, or is it just a place you lived?
I like Vegas. The fact that this is set in Vegas, even though it's like the third act aspect of the film does take place there, it's really not much of a Vegas film. I mean,
it kind of has this vibe, the sleazy vibe of Vegas throughout the whole thing. But you're right, it only has that tail end of the story in actual Vegas. Now, what is the dang story, sir?
All right. First of all, we start in 1945, post-war. Brad Pitt is returning from the conflict, and he meets his mother. He shows off this motorcycle he won in a poker game in Italy and decides to take her on a ride.
Yeah.
And two drunk yahoos hit them, and she dies, and he, in his grief, gets transported to this cartoon world.
Well, sir, it's not because of his grief, but he is totally in shock, and he's flipping out in shock. It looks like he's having a seizure, but then, magically, somehow, it's something called a spike.
Little spike of
cartoon
power.
Dude. Oh, this is a live-action animated film!
Yeah.
Right, folks, if you didn't know.
This is the only way I could get you to do a cartoon.
Yeah. I don't really want to do cartoon animated films because it's so easy to do weird. But this one I could justify because it actually has live action and animation, and the animation and live action go hand in hand. It's not like there's some nonsense reasons for it, but it's not like Roger Rabbit,
well,
where they exist in the same world.
If you were going to say anything about this film, it's the drunk, gross older brother to Roger Rabbit, even though it came out
after. Roger Rabbit isn't an alternate dimension. They all live on the same Earth.
But
this is an alternate dimension.
Yeah, but I'm talking like, you know, animation, live action, hybrid, you know, where
but
real people
I can justify it as an alternate universe story as opposed to just Roger Rabbit, which is just silly fun. Though Brad Pitt's character gets zapped into this portal through something called a spike.
Spike of power.
The spike of power, which has no explanation, by the way.
No.
And this little dude, who's a scientist, obviously, because he's got a mustache and he's
got
bald and he's wearing a lab coat.
Exactly. And his name is Dr. Whiskers or something like that.
Yeah, and he speaks with that cartoon voice. I'm a scientist!
Well, he's Maurice,
you know?
LaMarche, the guy who everyone knows more so nowadays as the Brain from Pinky and the Brain.
Okay, there you go. That guy.
I can't believe what I've done.
So that just sets up why Brad Pitt would be in a cartoon land.
Yeah.
You're a soldier. You're here now.
My spike was supposed to send me to your world, but instead, you're here.
You can stay around here. You'll be useful because you're a soldier. I could use you.
Yeah. And then you, like, basically smash cut to 1992. And Gabriel Byrne, he's a cartoonist in prison for murder.
Is it murder or manslaughter? People were saying, the man you murdered.
Yeah.
But I would say that it's manslaughter, probably. But he killed his wife's lover.
Yeah, so...
And wife, right?
Well, I think
he killed them both.
They never say the wife. They just say the lover.
He gets out of prison and goes to a comic shop and buys up a bunch of his books that he's been drawing while in prison. I don't think this whole prison system really works.
I'm looking at that going, he's got all these pens.
Sharp objects.
Really? They let him have shanks in prison.
They let him have sharp objects, which can be used as shanks or tools to escape via, like a lockpick type of thing. Yeah, I don't know. But while he's also in prison, just before he's let out, he starts flipping out and he gets sucked, for no good reason, into the alternate dimension, which is Cool World.
Yeah, it's like he's got a tie to it because he's been drawing this world.
Yeah, he thinks that he's created it, but a lot of artists say this, and sometimes it might be true. Ideas just come to them, and the idea takes over, and they have to get it out, and once they get it out, they're done. Now, I don't recall too many of my pieces actually being born that way, and I can't recall any specific one. Well, one, a Yeticorn drawing. Yeah, I drew a Yeticorn once, and it's actually the best Yeticorn I ever drew. And I had a Sharpie, and it was kind of a dying Sharpie too. And I just had a piece of paper, and I was leaving the room, and I picked up the Sharpie, and there was a piece of paper on the table, and I just quickly drew it, and I kept drawing, and then wow, that's like the best Yeticorn I ever drew. TM. So, I mean, I guess it can happen like that as an artist.
But yeah,
he thinks that he created Cool World, but Cool World already existed.
Yep. Been around at least 50 years prior to him.
Yeah. And so, in Cool World, what you have is
it's this weird mashup of animation styles.
Yes.
But a lot of which is just inspired by Fleischer Studios and Terrytoons. Those are like the bulk of like the
right
the main animation things.
And here's where we pause to talk about another animated feature, also directed by the same director, Ralph Bakshi. Ralph Bakshi got a claim to fame when he did Fritz the Cat.
Yeah.
The first rated X cartoon. Which is probably not true, but the first notable rated X cartoon where a cat has sex with a prostitute cat and it's an inner city, makes you feel horrible, but it's based on R. Crumb's work. Okay, so yeah, that's sometime in the 70s. Also sometime in the 70s, he does a inner city, everything he did was inner city until. So, inner city movie called Coonskin, he did
Heavy Traffic,
American Pop, which depresses the hell out of me. Everything he does depresses me, except for one. But he also did The Hobbit, and a thing called Wizards, which is...
Yeah, Wizards, based, Fire and Ice.
Wizards is based on the works of Von Bode, and then Fire and Ice, which is a sword and sorcery thing, which when I watch it, I'm like, this is so rotoscoped, why didn't they just shoot a movie?
Well, because he likes to rotoscope.
That's his thing.
That is one thing that kind of pops up, like you said, Wizard.
Yeah.
You know, pops up in a lot of his work.
American Pop is all rotoscoped.
Yeah.
So he had gotten work doing all these subversive films, and they're all a bitter taste to me. I can't stand them. And I don't really like how they look. He did a lot of TV work in the 80s, and he did this one thing called Christmas in Tattertown. Do you recall this?
I do.
Okay, Christmas in Tattertown is almost like a prototype for the kind of world that Cool World is. And I like Christmas in Tattertown for the most part. It's a bit obnoxious. It's got a little dolly that is mean and rogue. And she comes to life in this world called Tattertown. And there's a human character that comes to Tattertown. It really is a prototype for Cool World. All the way down to a spider character, which seems to be lifted from Tattertown and put into Cool World.
Yeah, in this film called Nails.
Yes. So I like a lot of what Tattertown did, because they had a short amount of time, so it's like a half hour long, and they could spend more time on the animation. Even though it was TV animation, they could spend more time on the backgrounds and more interesting gags, like random things popping up, but not so obnoxious and needless. Like, it's random and silly, and it works in a 30-minute format. So, that said, the one thing that I do like from Ralph Bakshi, Christmas in Tattertown, does not translate into a bigger format to me. Because it seems what he did was just take all the obnoxious little moments and loop them like crazy whenever there was call for animation in the film.
Yeah, there's a lot of just meaningless, pointless animation moments in this. Like, there's a scene, you know, people will be sitting there talking, dialogue scene, and all of a sudden, just small in the foreground, people are running around, and it's like, why are you doing this? Whereas, I mean, there's other parts, like, later on where, you know, people are there and it's on the street, and you've got random cartoon nonsense happening in the foreground, but it's at least, it kind of fits because it's an outside sequence, whereas like one of the scenes is like inside Holly's apartment, and it's just, why are these people running right in front of everything for no apparent reason? Not even like, oh, there's people, it's a party, so of course they could be running in and out of the scene. No, this is two people talking that is now being undercut by this nonsense in the foreground.
Yes, and that happens far too much. So you mentioned Holly? Though, who the heck is Holly?
Hollywood, HollyWould.
Because she totally does, or would. It did, you know, eventually in the film anyway.
Yeah, Kim Basinger will play her. She is supposed to be some sort of kind of 1940s-ish femme fatale.
She's theoretically based on Marilyn Monroe.
This is an exact replica of the dress Marilyn Monroe wore in Let's Make Love. I know that movie by heart. The girl gets everything by the end of it. Everything she ever wanted.
But
yeah,
she is absolutely 100% Kim Basinger. Which I think Kim Basinger is cursed with just constantly being sexy. And I don't think that she, until she got old, could get away from it. Like, this was the time when she was like in her late 30s, I do believe. And that was like, I think this was her thing. Like, she was really into this role.
No, actually, don't necessarily want to get too into what happened with this film.
No, go ahead. Yet. Go ahead, by all means.
Okay.
Do it.
All right.
Get into
this
it.
Film...
Because this...
This film was originally, when Bakshi pitched it, it was supposed to be like this hard R-rated...
Yeah.
They used the term horror film.
Well, I do know that it was supposed to have something to do with a cartoonist who had sex with a cartoon, and his offspring was a hybrid, and that a hybrid wanted to kill him for some reason. That's all I know.
Yeah, she hated what she was, and she wanted to travel to the real world to kill her father, because, you know, her father abandoned her.
Okay.
And so, what ended up happening is Frank Mancuso, who produced all the Friday 13th 13th film.
Oh, okay.
He decided they didn't want to do another horror film. So he had the script rewritten in secret by the guys who are listed as the screenwriters in this film now. And they basically more or less made it what it is. Bakshi got really pissed and actually went in and they got into a fight. And apparently Bakshi punched Mancuso straight in the face.
That's amazing. Because Bakshi is, by the way, I don't understand this. I'm 6'4". I'm not quite built like a giant gorilla, but I'm pretty big. Cartoonists, a lot of us tend to be like these giant galoots. It's weird. It's very strange. And Bakshi is said to be one of the most hot-headed guys who does cartoons ever.
Yeah. And it shows, because you can, when you talk about his work, it's, you can kind of tell that he's definitely a certain type of person.
Yeah. So he punched Mancuso in the face.
Yeah, lawsuits more or less kind of got thrown around, and Bakshi had to complete the film or else get sued. So he started making this movie, and then Kim Basinger, somewhere in the middle of production, decided that she didn't want to make this, because I guess they toned it down to probably what would be PG-13. She wanted it toned down to PG so she could take it to kids in hospitals so she can show it to them. So other edges got shaved off, yet this...
That's weird, because this film is very PG-13. It's not PG at all. And now that you're saying things were shaved and changed, I see what I thought was Kim Basinger was like really throwing herself into this role and taking the reins of the Hollywood character and all that stuff. But you're saying she regretted the hard R aspect? So she...
Yeah, or she decided she was probably into the idea of it and then went, you know what? I'd rather do a kids movie.
That's weird because there's nothing kids about her character.
Oh, no. And I can't imagine how they could.
Dude, there are implied handies going on in this flick. It's kind of like the FHM of adult cartoons, whatever. FHM would be like implied nudity. This is implied boning or hand jobs and stuff. They aren't at all tight-lipped about the topic of...
Noids do not have sex with doodles.
Yeah, that's like, that seems to be the one rule of Cool World is noids... for whatever reason that they call humans.
Humanoids.
Noids.
Humanoids.
Oh, okay.
That's why.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so noids.
I was thinking nerds.
Noids. Hey, what are you looking at, you noid?
No,
exactly.
It's humanoid.
He does have that kind of New York-y, he does have that New York-y thing going with it, so it kind of feels like...
Okay, so you...
Noids do not have sex with doodles.
Yeah, so Brad Pitt is the cop now of Cool World, and then... Gabriel Byrne shows up and he has a talking to and says, don't bone a cartoon, which then the plot really goes quickly to have Hollywood and Gabriel Byrne's character bone. Just like it goes so fast to that.
Now, what's weird is considering how quickly this film does, because it's an hour and 40 or so minutes, and it does move pretty fast until you get to the last third, which then it really drags. But it's, weirdly enough, I kind of wish we spent a little bit more time in the real world with Gabriel, because I don't know, it seemed, I wanted to know a little bit more about this guy.
Yeah, they didn't develop him.
There's no development on pretty much any of these characters.
Well, there
really,
is Brad's character. Brad's character is developed. Yeah. He's the only one that they stay with at all.
Brad Pitt was also supposed to be the Gabriel Byrne character originally.
Oh, that's weird.
Drew Barrymore, I guess, was supposed to be Hollywood.
Oh, right. Yeah, I did read Drew Barrymore. That wouldn't have worked, I don't think. But let me say, Brad Pitt, super inconsistent acting here. When he's opposite a cartoon, it looks like he has no idea what he's actually doing.
Where are you from?
I'm Vegas.
When he's opposite a human...
Shoot me, Harris!
Push me! Don't push me! You just couldn't take a piece of good advice, could you?
The dude lights up. He's acting. He's doing the job. He's with his mom. He's with Gabriel Byrne. It looks right. When he's opposite, celluloid.
Any of the animation, it's hit or miss. Yeah, the one thing you can't deny is that he's trying.
Yeah.
But he's also of the characters, because Gabriel Byrne's the one who gets the interaction with the cartoon also. He's the one who seems to have the most physical things actually happening.
He really seems like he's, at least when you look at him acting, it looks like he thinks that he has to hold the entire film up. And he's not exactly wrong, I don't think. His is a tragic tale. It's really a bummer. Why did it go that way? But
what's also kind of funny is if you look at the marketing on the film, the poster, he's not even on the poster.
No,
it's
he is.
Brad Pitt.
It's Brad Pitt.
No, he's...
And it's...
Well, it's Brad Pitt and...
Hollywood.
And looks like it's a real detective story or something like that.
But Gabriel Byrne's not on the pic... No. And none of the other human actors are. Yeah, it's interesting, I'll tell you that. It's an oddity that could be watched once in your lifetime and you'd be okay. You'd still be left scratching your head with all the plot problems. But man, is it great. It grates under my skin. It gets my nerves, dude. I can watch so much crazy stuff, but this one is just so...
I don't know. I see a good film in here, but not the film that we were given.
Well, I think about having the movie taken away from him, I think maybe that's why we got all that nonsense in front of the screen. That was thrown there in spite, I believe. Now that you say it, that's what I believe.
One of the things that's really sad is the film really does try to be funny. You can see them really trying to make jokes, and nothing worked.
Yeah, like, I don't think any jokes landed. Nails' character is like the only character that's... By the way, his animation on Nails was great. You can tell that he loved the character of Nails. Obviously, he took him from another thing that he produced. He loved Nails, and there's a scene where he's calling Brad to tell him what's up. That animation looks like it's from a different film.
Well, there's all kinds of different things. There's this moment where you have the character Spike, who ends up being this informant for Nails, and he's got the hots for Holly, and he's kind of wandering around. These kids start ragging on him because Holly obviously wants to go with this human guy. And, you know, the scene has completely different animation quality. It's like so much better than anything else in the film, because basically most of the animation of this film is really flat and ugly.
Yeah. So you have that, you have the Nails scene where he's on the phone, and Elby even brought it up. She's like, that doesn't look like it belongs in this film. Because the animation quality, when I say it's different, it's better different. But hey, there's this one really cool shot. It's not animation, it is background painting. Now, this movie excels in background paintings. It's very Robert Williams. I don't know if you know who he is. He's a painter who does insane... If Norman Rockwell painted zany car crashes, people flying out of the cars, and then throw some TNA in those images too, and that's kind of what he does. Now, some of the paintings here, there's like a spiral building with a big mouth on it. That thing is a really great painting. And I was like, that's probably like the best thing in this film, visually. There's a thing that they do with the sets as well when the humans come in. The paintings are no longer just background paintings. They're flat still, but they are as if they're props on a stage.
Yeah, it's like they're like cardboard cutouts, but it's like it gives the illusion that it is 2D planes. You see, like different planes of this.
Right. I found that to be interesting, and the style of artwork that they did with those was also pretty interesting. It's like Imagineer stuff, but darker and more like concept artwork.
There's all kinds of weird, interesting animation, interesting backgrounds, but then also, like I said, flat and ugly animation or weird line animation that shows up.
I'm surprised that there wasn't a lot of shading going on in the animation, because this is a time when Disney was doing shading in their work, and Don Bluth was like the competitor to Disney, so of course they were following the same techniques, and they were doing, you know, especially with live action animation stuff, again, talk about Roger Rabbit, they tried to make them look like they had the same light sources touching them, the live action guy and the animated guy.
Well,
we're both in the actual same scene, and here they didn't even bother.
Well, there is a little bit of that, because there's that, when I talk about saying that the humor doesn't really work, there is a line that I found funny. I think it's mostly in delivery of it, more so than what it is. And it's also kind of, with the animation, does have that slightly Disney-ish look, but it's, you know, everyone starts realizing that there's some sex going down, and this mother rabbit just goes,
"Man is in the bedroom."
And freaks out.
Okay, so that was also another totally different piece of animation style.
Yes.
And it was the most brief. Like I said, it's an oddity of a film. But once they bone, she becomes Kim Basinger.
Yeah. And her clothes magically float down onto her.
Yeah.
Which was
that's
funny.
Right. So how can you go from hard R, yes, you go to PG-13, which is possible. But how can you go from this PG-13, which at the time they allowed for a lot more lascivious stuff in PG-13 films than they do today, to PG, which is her goal? How could she even tame it?
No,
there's nothing.
I have a feeling that she wanted to do this, and if she even threw out ideas on there, everyone probably just said, no, this is going to take too long. We're already animating stuff. No.
She did the body acting, right? She did all the acting for her, right?
I haven't seen anything that says so, but I would, if they did any rotoscoping, I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, because she matches her a lot. Isn't Kim Basinger like a triple threat? She can dance, sing, and act, right? So I think that's really why they were pushing for her, and this would be a great project for her, especially if they can turn the sex thing up, which she's known for since 9 and a half weeks, you know?
Yeah.
She gets out to the real world with Gabriel Byrne. I don't even know what Gabriel's name is.
Oh, Jack. Jack Deeves, yeah.
Oh, geez. Jack. What an easy, simple name to name a main character in a comic book-style movie.
Gosh. Yeah, Jack and Frank, Jack. You know?
Yeah. Well, Frank goes after them. They all get out. And here's what I do like. I like the neighbors, the real-world neighbors. The two ladies, the mom and the daughter. And I thought that they were actually sisters. But the daughter, I think, was actually really well played. She was enthusiastic. It's unrealistic in the situation, but she seems like a person that's like,
yeah, she,
caution to the wind, yeah, I'm going for this adventure.
Yeah, she just buys into it like, okay, there's cartoons. There's a cartoon world. All right, let's do it.
When I say daughter, she's an adult daughter. So there's something that happens to Hollywood and Jack, which doesn't make a lick of sense.
Oh, it?
They start flickering into animation in the real world. No, that makes sense, I guess, to the story, but what they look like.
Well, yeah, because it's completely different than what, Gabriel Byrne, it really should just be Holly who starts turning into a cartoon since he's not.
Unless she spread sort of like a STD something, maybe?
Could be.
Cartoon STD, where they look like Holly Hobby / Patchwork Hobo kind of clowns. I don't know why they went with that, but they keep flickering in and out. This is a time when morphing was not being employed too well in movies, so they didn't even go with that. They didn't do fading in and out. They flickered, like turning on and off a light rapidly.
Oh.
And it didn't work.
There is a scene in this that I had to stop and make sure I made a note.
What's that?
They're in Vegas, and Holly realizes that, oh yeah, there's that, the spike of power should be here in Vegas because...
The myth.
Yeah, this myth of...
Some guy got out and became a Vegas mogul.
Yeah, and so she can find this spike, and it'll fix everything. And he is telling her, this is crazy, it's not here. And she ends up kicking him out of this car. She kicks him out of the car in front of a police car. And it's not like... it's not that it's parked on the side of the road like, you know... Like, this is the middle of the street. This cop car's there. She kicks him out and then drives erratically away. And the cop does nothing.
No, it doesn't.
I know Bakshi has an issue with cops,
Right. But she stops off first at a nightclub reason.
Well, it's a casino.
To seduce everyone and to sing a song with Frank Sinatra Jr. there.
Yeah, she's...
That's who the singer was.
Oh, yeah. And because she's inspired by Marilyn Monroe, she wants everything. So she wants all the men. She wants all the boobs. She wants everything.
And by the end of the song, she starts flipping out into this flickery cartoon thing, which doesn't even look like she did in Cool World. So, yeah, there I'm like, I don't get it. I mean, I get it, but I don't get it.
Yeah, it's...
But, so they get to the spike, right? And they have this big sort of chase up to the spike to... We'll get her back into Cool World, but what, the spike is just a plug? Is that what it is?
It seems like that's what it ends up being, is it just kind of, it's holding the Cool World in place, because once it's removed, all these cartoons start invading the world, all of the ghosts at the end of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, at no point in this movie was there, don't take the spike, it will do harm and cause the world to be overrun by crazy cartoon ghosts. By the way, when I say cartoon ghosts, literally cartoon ghosts. Because Cool World is made up of regular cartoon characters, but the only threat to the real world is the ghosts in Cool World, I guess? Because that's all they show coming out. Like, they show graveyards. They show ghosts. They show monsters.
Well,
they
graveyard
show the ghouls, the underworld.
The graveyard thing is much like a homage to Fantasia, because it's almost it's almost exactly like a scene from it.
Yeah, never set up. There's no setup to this. I sound like you, John, when you're reviewing something by David Lynch.
Yes,
this is me doing my impression of you reviewing a David Lynch movie. Is me
talking about this thing, yes.
Cool World.
And
there's
no setup,
and it makes no sense. There's so much else that is unnecessary, and I know movies are unnecessary in general, but the cacophony of animation and sound and annoyance that's in this film I get why it's there now. I get it. It's there in spite. But as a film, watching it without that backstory, no, dude, doesn't make sense.
The biggest thing is that the film doesn't even have an internal logic. Even my problems with like Twin Peaks, listen to Next Planet Over's review of Twin Peaks.
Plug.
Yes. It at least, I can concede that as much as it annoyed me and frustrated me at times, there at least was some internal logic to things happening.
Yes. You know, and here?
Nothing. Nothing at all. It just...
Yet you wanted me to watch this!
I hadn't seen this in a long time, and I thought the soundtrack was amazing, so I'm going, maybe there's something in here that's actually pretty good, and there's a couple of things in it, but not enough... Not enough to recommend everybody go out and buy a copy of it. And
no, don't. That's why it's not on Blu-ray, but I bet you Shout's going to drop it next year or something. I don't know. Yeah. I can't recommend it. As an oddity, I do recommend it. Absolutely, I mean, as an oddity.
I mean,
watch all garbage as an oddity, if that's your inclination. But
it is worth seeing once, if only to say, why did I watch this? Oh yeah, some idiot on the internet said I should see it.
Hi, we're the idiot on the internet. You stick with your Roger Rabbits.
Well, yes, Roger Rabbit's a much better film than this. Like I said, it's just... Mm-hmm.
Internal logic.
Yep.
It's there in Roger Rabbit. It's not here. No.
Well, that's the thing, is I see a good film in this, and if you more or less played it a little more straight detective story where you had Holly, because she does kind of come off, because she, you know, when they're doing the chase up the casino, she kills Frank. She drops him... from there in, but she does it in toon form because we had to have this in order. If a toon kills a human, the human becomes a toon.
It's so after the fact too.
Yeah,
it's shoehorned in at the end,
just so we could have a happy ending. Yes.
Yeah, like all right, our main character. That's why I said it was kind of a bummer. His story is tragic because I absolutely forgot that he turned into a cartoon. But he shows up in Cool World. That bit of information comes out then. There's no setup for anything. Nothing is set up.
Yeah, it's like...
Except because the boning was set up. And I know in behind the scenes, when they pitched this, they said, dude has sex with a cartoon hot chick. And the producers said, yes. That is so late 80s mentality. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
And then they chickened out on it, of course.
But like what I said, this film could have been good is essentially if Hollywood more... I don't want to necessarily say serial killer, but... a killer type, a little more prone to violence, and still wants to get out to the real world. And then it's a little, you know, you have a little bit more of detective hunting down a psychotic cartoon.
You could basically have the movie Species.
Yeah.
Take out the alien stuff, make it a cartoon thing, make it work with the cartoon thing. The setup has to work along with the cartoon thing, but then follow through with the same Species plotline of chase down the weird alien, which would be weird cartoon human hybrid. As she goes from dude to dude, sexuality might be like the energy she needs. She could be like this cartoon sex vampire sort of thing to get her real worldness more corporeal than cartoon. There's ways that you could do it, like you said, and they just didn't.
Yeah, unfortunately they didn't make that movie, they made this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jack turns into a superhero, kind of Superman-esque, tries to get seduced again, just almost falls for it, then stops everything, and then he's trapped in some sort of alternate dimension with Holly.
And he's still a superhero.
And yeah. She's not happy.
No.
The end. Oh, yeah, and...
Yep.
Oh, and yep. Yeah.
Well, now Brad Pitt can actually have sex with his cartoon girlfriend.
Yes.
Because he's a cartoon.
Who is very much Betty Boop without getting the rights to Betty Boop.
Well, she's like kind of like the brunette version of Hollywood, really, visually. I actually prefer his girlfriend to Hollywood, but
well, because
they seem to be modeled the same way, you know?
But she's much more interesting of a character than Holly is. I mean, Holly
is... Right. Everything with Brad Pitt is, if you're really looking for character work and character motivations and stuff, everything with Brad Pitt. Everything else has nothing. There's nothing. So
pretty much, yes.
But you got David Bowie out of retirement.
Yeah. See, yeah, there you go. You know what? Instead of going to see this film, search your local music
store. There
you
go. You endorse the soundtrack. You do not endorse the film. I don't necessarily endorse either. I endorse that song, Real Cool World. And on that note, folks, I say good night. Stay tuned for the next episode when, I don't know, I'm not going to get John back. I never try to get him back, but it always... He kind of thinks I do. You kind of think I do.
Oh, yes. Well, it's in my contract. I get to torture you at least one time per year. Minimum.
Get it out early this year. All right. On that note, everybody, I bid you adieu.
Have a good one, everyone.
Hey, what are you looking at, you noid?